everybody. Great to see you today. Happy Father's Day to all of you men, all of you fathers, all of you influencers. I just want to let you know that you are more important than you could ever imagine. And so we celebrate you today. We're wrapping up our series called The Art of Being Unordinary. I want to talk to us today about leaving an unordinary legacy. Now, this series, we've been talking about this big idea that if you want what ordinary people have, then do what ordinary people do. But if you want what few people have, then you've got to be willing to do what few people do. And we're discovering over this series that ordinary is not working. That when we pick up our feet, when we just coast, when we go along with culture, we go along with the flow, it's going to lead us to a place that we don't want to end up. And that's certainly the case when it comes to leaving a legacy. Now, this series has been research heavy because we've been trying to show statistically what ordinary is today. And so let me continue that trend, give us one of the most staggering statistics that I can show us today. Here it is. 100% of people are going to die. Okay? Just so you know. I mean, if you came and you didn't know that, sorry to be a downer on you. 100% of people are going to die. And I'll tell you that as a pastor for the last 13 years and walking with people when their loved ones have died and doing funerals, I'll tell you that people die differently. People die differently. And if you're taking notes, you can write this in that ordinary people die with regrets, but unordinary people die with a legacy. Regrets and legacy. And all of it has to do with the intentionality of how you live your life, regrets or legacy. Ordinary people die with regrets, all the things they wish they had done, all the things they wish they had said or didn't say, all of these things. But unordinary people, yeah, they've got things that they wish they could have done differently. But they die leaving a legacy, making an impact on the next generation. Doing funerals for people, it plays out differently. A lot of times we'll meet with a family and just say, hey, will you tell me about your loved one? And sometimes it's really awkward because I'm like, hey, tell me about your loved one. And they're like, tell me some good stories. Tell me about a time they impacted your life. And they're like, well, granddad loved college football. I'm like, what? Granny sure loved her gardening. You're like, come on, give me something to work with. They answer, and it's like there's nothing, no positive stories to tell, no deep impact that they made. But other times you meet with families, and it's like, hey, tell me about the loved one. And there's just an incredible amount of emotion going on. There's a lot of tears, and there are tears of grief because they're going to miss their loved one. But there's also tears of gratitude and just an incredible amount of emotion. And the stories begin to flow. And it's like, you know, I remember the time that he did this, or she used to always say this, or one time he looked at me, and I'll never forget his look, and he said this, or I'll never forget when they did this. And there's just this rich depth of emotion and love and stories and gratitude. I'll tell you, ordinary people die with regrets. Unordinary people die leaving a legacy. And I want to tell you this morning, our key verse today is Psalm 112. We're going to start in verse 1, and it says this. It says, how joyful are those who fear the Lord and in delight in obeying his commands. Their children will be successful everywhere. An entire generation of godly people will be blessed. Verse 3 continues, it says, they themselves will be wealthy and their good deeds will what? Let's say this together. Their good deeds will last forever. In other words, their good deeds are going to outlast them. They've left a legacy. People remember what they did. They made an eternal difference in people's lives. Verse 4, it says, they are generous, compassionate, and righteous. They're generous. Imagine if we imparted the legacy, we left a legacy of radical generosity, where we impart these values to the next generation because we truly believe it's better to give than to receive. It says they're compassionate. Imagine if we left a legacy where we cared so deeply about people that every time they left our presence, they felt better about themselves. They were compassionate. It says that they are righteous, that they set their lives apart for the glory of God to be different. And verse 6, the second part says, those who are righteous will be long remembered. In other words, they're not going to die and people talk about them like, well, they love college football and they love their gardening and there's going to be something incredible said about them because they've left a legacy. They've imparted their values and their faith and it's going to last. They'll leave a legacy. So what I want to do today is talk to you as dads and as moms, as coaches, as grandparents and grandmas and grandpas, those that influence the next generation, those of you that are teachers and just influencers, because that's what we're all called to as followers of Jesus. And I want to show us today some of the most common barriers to leaving a legacy in today's culture. And let me just give you a little bit of a foundation, because historians and sociologists have studied and they've discovered a trend, and people call it different things. One person calls it the problem of the third generation. And basically what they've discovered is that it's incredibly difficult to pass on anything of importance through the first to the second to the third generation, whether that be passing along faith to the third generation, whether that's passing on wealth to the third generation, passing on a business. In fact, the Harvard Business Review wrote an article, and they said that only 10% of family-owned businesses survive through the third generation. There's a joke that says that the first generation starts it, the second generation runs it, and the third generation ruins it. And so they just show that it's incredibly difficult to pass on anything of value through the third generation. In fact, even as you look at the scriptures, you see story after story of this bearing fact. In fact, if you look at Joshua, the great commander of Israel's armies, he's Moses' apprentice. He leads the people of Israel into the promised land. You've got the first generation of risk and reward. Then what happens to the second generation? The second generation inherits the promised land. There's no great battles that are fought. They move into preservation mode. Their worship of God becomes half-hearted. And then the third generation comes along, and all they've seen is preservation, safety, playing it safe. All they've seen is half-hearted worship of God. And they're like, why are we even worshiping this God? And they turn away from God. And in Judges chapter 21, verse 25, here's what it says. It says, in those days, Israel had no king. All the people did whatever seemed right in their own eyes. And so this legacy of worship of God, this legacy of faith, this legacy of risk and reward and victory, it's all gone by the time the third generation comes to pass. There's no legacy that's passed on. But I want to tell you this morning that we as followers of Jesus are called to something greater. And so I want to show you this morning three of the most common barriers to leaving a legacy today. And number one is this, if you're taking notes. The first barrier to leaving a legacy, all of us as influencers, is this, is that we risk too little. We risk too little. In fact, I was at the park with Sarah and Jake's dad a couple years ago with the kids, and he was telling me that all across the state of Indiana, they're taking out all of these playgrounds. Now, if you're my generation or a little bit older, you remember playgrounds, also known as death traps. It's like, if you fall, you will break a bone. If you go on a hot day, you will get a third-degree burn. Anyway, they're replacing all of these things. They're getting rid of them because of liability. And now we're going to move all the playgrounds, and so nobody gets hurt. And I don't know if you're a teacher, you're not allowed to use red ink anymore because you don't want to damage the delicate psyche of little Johnny, and all of these different things. You know, you show up at a sport and you suck, but you still get a trophy. And so all of these different things. And what happens because of this is that we protect the next generation from normal things. And here's the way that I say it, is that we keep them from experiencing the blessing of failure. That failure teaches us so much in life. Now, college, statistically, what we're seeing is college professors say that 18-year-olds are afraid to fill in an application because they might mess it up. They don't want to interview for a job because they're afraid that they might not get it. We've got more and more 16 and 17-year-olds that don't want to drive now and get a driver's license because, why? Mom and dad will drive me around. It's safer that way. And so we've robbed them of the blessing of failing. And the reality is that this isn't on the next generation. This is on us. Those of us that lead them, because we haven't shown or modeled how to fail well. We've not been vulnerable and showed them how we've failed and how we've experienced the blessing of it. We haven't given safe opportunities to risk something, given opportunities to put themselves out there or to take a leap. And because they don't learn that early on, it's so much more difficult to learn that later on in life. It's difficult to learn the blessing of failing. I think this principle applies nearly across the board, that if you own a business or you're in a place of leadership, I'd encourage you not to make this mistake, that instead that you would train and release and let those underneath you make mistakes in a safe place and allow their gift of leadership to develop. I'll say it like this if you're taking notes, that we don't leave a legacy by what we achieve. We leave a legacy by whom we empower. That's what makes the biggest difference. Not how much money you make, not what kind of job title you have, but who you released, who you developed, who you empowered. That's what leaves a legacy. And we can only empower when we give opportunities to succeed and to fail. Where we look at our kids and we look at those that we lead and we say, you can do this. You should go for this. I believe in you. And let me give you this opportunity. Or I see this in you that you don't even see in yourself, so you need to do this. Instead, so often what we hear is, hey, it's too risky. You might get hurt. You'll never be good at that. And so number one is that we risk too little. Number two, if you're taking notes, is that we rescue too quickly. We rescue too quickly. You see, they get in trouble. It's 11 o'clock at night. They forget their science project. And mom is the one that's up finishing the science project. Or they forget their jacket, or they forget their lunch money, and dad takes off work and runs to the school instead of teaching them how to be accountable for their own decisions and actions. So instead of letting them go hungry for a meal or a little chilly without a jacket, or I love this one, they get in trouble at school and mom and dad are over there meeting with the principal and with the teacher and like, oh, little Johnny would never do that. And everybody else is like, yes, he would. Little Johnny's a terrorist. My mom and dad would say, hey, you punish him first and then send him home and we'll do it. In fact, I read one article that said 85% of those under the age of 32 will move back home at least once after the time of college. 85%. And what's crazy is that it's just becoming normative. That, hey, you go home and, hey, just take some time. We'll pay the bills. You figure life out, whatever that looks like, because we just want you to be happy. Find that perfect job. And what are we doing? We're rescuing too quickly. And because we've rescued too early, we keep them from learning about natural consequences. That if you do this, this is where you'll lead. But if you don't allow that process to happen, they never learn the principle of sowing and reaping. Imagine this. Jesus tells a story about the prodigal son. And the prodigal son goes to his dad and says, hey, I want all my money. And you realize what the father did not do? The father didn't rescue him. The father loved him enough. I mean, the kid took the money. He ran away. He blew it all. He's living with pigs, eating their food. He's in bad shape. But the father loved him enough to allow the son come to his own natural consequences, the own realization of his natural consequences of his bad decision making. And so that he could come to his senses and say, hey, this is no way to live. But if the father would have rescued his son would have never have realized that on his own. And so oftentimes we protect those that we lead from the natural consequences of bad decisions. And what happens is we handicap them, we cause their decision, their development to atrophy when they could be doing so much more and developing so much more. And so we're trying to protect them from the things that actually will end up helping them. And so we risk too little, we rescue too quickly. These are barriers to leaving a legacy. Number three is that we reward too quickly. We reward too quickly. What I'm talking about is that we give them things that they should actually be earning on their own. We give it to them with good motives. We want to help them. We want better things for them. But the better thing is actually for them to earn it. What happens when, say, we give our employees opportunities that they haven't earned for them just because we like them, or we give our kids a $100 pair of shoes, or we give them a new iPhone, or we buy them a new car when they're 16, all of these things that they haven't worked for, they've not learned how to save for these things, not how to do chores at home, make an allowance, save, plan, budget. They haven't learned all of these things. And when we do that, what happens is we teach them that everything in life comes easy. And that's not true. It's no wonder that one day they wake up when they're 24 and they are dissatisfied and they feel like life is totally unfair, that they don't have the things that their parents have, even though their parents worked 30 years to achieve it. And so they're going to go into debt to get it again and again and handicap themselves again for the future because we haven't helped them. Basically and essentially what we've done is, I think this is one of our biggest problems in our culture today, is that we've placed happiness as the ultimate goal in all of life. That we just need to be happy. We've bowed down. It's almost like this altar of happiness. It's like, oh, I just want my little baby to be happy. I just want them to have more than I had. And when the reality is that we're protecting them from things that are going to benefit them, all because we don't want them to be momentarily unhappy. And then what happens is later on they develop this mindset that, if I can't afford it, I deserve it because I should be happy. And if I can't afford it, I'm just going to put it on my credit card and pay 18% interest over the next 50 years of my life because it makes me happy. Or it plays out not just financially, but relationally. Think about this. That if it's all about happiness and I get into a relationship, I'm married to somebody and my ultimate goal is to be happy. Yeah, I made a promise before God and to this other person to be faithful for better, for worse, or until this other person makes me unhappy. Because if they're not making me happy, then, you know, God wants us to be happy, right? Doesn't the Bible say, be happy for I am happy? Doesn't it say that? No, I think I got that wrong. It says, be holy for I am holy. See, God wants holy before happy. And so oftentimes the problem is that when we pursue happiness as the end goal, it's always elusive. You can never pursue happiness and get it to fulfill that void that's in our life. You get as much as you think, maybe if I make more money, then I'll be happy. And then you make that much more money, and what happens? I just need a little bit more. Or you like, I need a new car, or I need a new thing, and then you get that new thing and it wears off, and you're like, I just need a new thing. That's what'll make me happy. You think about all of these different things. See, it just doesn't work. Or you think, man, if I just had somebody different, then I'd be happy. And you get somebody different and you're still unhappy. You know why? Because your unhappy self is still with you. You haven't dealt with this stuff and all these different things. See, if you pursue happiness, it will never make you happy. But if you pursue God, if that's the goal, listen. Happiness, joy, contentment is a byproduct of a life well lived for the glory of God. See, you see, when you're serving God, there is a deep sense of fulfillment. There's this abiding joy. And for example, in our opening verse, it says that they will be generous, compassionate, and righteous. All of these things are outwardly demonstrating qualities that benefit other people. And yet today, what's ordinary is teaching the next generation. It's all about them. Just want you to be happy. And what's ordinary is for us to model that in ourselves, that really what I'm after is just to make my own self happy. But when we leave a legacy of spirit-led generosity to the next generation, guess what happens? There is joy in that. There is joy in radical generosity because we're using what we have to make a difference, to benefit somebody else's life. And the byproduct of that is a deep sense of gratitude and satisfaction. And think about compassion. If we leave a legacy of compassion, when we care about other people, you know what culture says? It says it's all about you. But when we think about other people, when we care about so much about other people that I want to make a difference in somebody else's life, I want to provide for them and care for them and love them, compassion, there is joy in that. There's fulfillment in that. There is peace in that. That's the byproduct of that life. Think about righteousness. If we're going to leave a legacy of righteousness where we say my life is set apart for the glory of God and making a difference in this world, when that is your goal, you're not going to end up in an ordinary place. You're not going to end up where most people end up. And there's going to be people that look at you and say to you, why do you do it like that? And you're going to have to realize, hey, I can't please everybody, but I can please God. And when you use your gifts and your abilities to make an eternal difference, the byproduct of that is joy and peace and contentment. It's not the goal. It's the byproduct of the goal of pursuing God. And so all of that being said, let me leave you with one statement about leaving a legacy. If you want to leave a legacy with your life, whether you're a biological parent or not, let me give this to you. That we have to focus less on today's happiness and more on tomorrow's readiness. Less on today's happiness, more on tomorrow's readiness. That we need to be less concerned in our children and those that we influence and those that we lead about today's happiness, and instead prepare them with the gifts and the tools and the values to live a life for the glory of God. We need to worry less about today's happiness and more on tomorrow's readiness. And so let me end with this question. What legacy do you want to leave with your life? What kind of legacy do you want to leave with your life? If it's not regrets, then let me encourage you not to risk too little, not to rescue too quickly, and not to reward too frequently, and instead leave a legacy where you model what this looks like of eternal significance. I'm going to invite the band to come forward. I want to share with you just the legacy that my dad has been leaving with me over the last 36 years. And my dad has been leaving with me the legacy of putting God first in absolutely everything, in his finances, in his relationships, in his time with his church. He's left with me the legacy of delayed gratification, not being a slave to every whim, but doing the right thing at the right time. He's been leaving with me the legacy of faithfulness and longevity in a culture, in a pastoral culture, where most pastors stay 2 to 3 years and then move on when things get difficult. They've been here over 20 years, and not only in ministry, but in faithful marriage. He's been married to my mom this summer for 40 years in faithful commitment. Leaving the legacy of being a lifelong learner, of being a wise steward of what God has given him, of the power of negotiation, of working hard for the kingdom of God, and so much more. Let me ask you, what kind of legacy do you want to leave with your life? Let's bow our heads and pray this morning.